You are listening to Wrestling Goons Radio, the podcast from the IWC for the IWC, and this is our WWE United Champions post-show. We have a lot to get into you today. Holy crap. Tons of shockers that a lot of it we saw coming. We called most of this down to the end of the show, which we all got wrong. We'll be able to get into that and much more. We want to thank everybody listening on Max Sports Sandals at Power Station FM. And if you're listening on the internet, you can get us at wrestlinggoonsradio.blogspot.com and cellular devices. Find us at iTunes and Stitcher. I got tonight with me Dan Tanner, Mark Pitts, and Brian Compton. Guys, let's hop right into this. On the pre-show, we had the Cosmic Wasteland facing off against Neville and the Lucha Dragons. Early in the match, Dragons and the Nevilles, they get their dives in. Cosmic Wasteland, then they took advantage. The Dragons, we were able to get the hot tag, and they cleared the ring. Stardust and Neville are the only two left. Neville had a variation of all of his top rope moves, dives that he does. The Ascension, they get the save on Stardust. Neville goes back up, and Stardust shoves Victor into Neville, knocking him down, and he lands in a dark manner. Cosmic Wasteland getting the win. Any surprise here that stood out to you, Dan?
To be honest with you, I missed this match. However, I did catch who won, and I'm okay with the Cosmic Wasteland winning. Like I said on the preview show, that this could mean something to the Ascension, and it can also build more character into Stardust's role. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way you did. I felt like he had to win, so I'm really glad he did. And he got the dirty win, too. So I just wonder where they build off of it. Brian, any clue where they're going to go next with this?
I have no clue where they're actually going to go with this. But I agree with both of you that they needed to win. I feel like hopefully they can move away from Neville and let Neville do his own thing now. Wherever they do go, the Ascension and Stardust, they will remain heel. Hopefully the Ascension can learn some things from Stardust and not just go along for the ride, because the stable's not going to last forever.
I'm hoping that they also maybe break the Lucha Dragons up. It's time to get Kalisto his own identity. That's just my 2 cents. Mark, what was your thoughts on the match in general?
Pretty well for what it was and just a pre-show match. But I will say that I think the Lucha Dragons and Neville and Stardust and the Ascension, I don't think that their feud's quite over with yet. I see maybe one more match, but I honestly don't know where the Cosmic Wasteland will end up. Hopefully by the time this feud's done, maybe King Barrett can come back and have a tag team of his own, and maybe that's where they can go. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
I don't know what they're going to do with Neville, but as they said, I'm hoping that they do something outside of this team stuff. Neville needs to be elevated. It seems like right now he's in the jobber role, and that's not what he needs to be in. We're going to move on next to Ryback and Kevin Owens for the Intercontinental title. Ryback took advantage early in this match with his strength. He picked Kevin Owens up, gorilla pressing him outside of the ring. That's when Owens grabbed his arm and jerked him across the ropes. It was Kevin Owens working on that arm for the rest of this match, keeping the momentum on his side. At the very end of this match, Ryback stands up while he's in an armbar, and he slams Kevin Owens down. He goes for the shell shock, but Kevin Owens rakes his eyes. Ryback is blinded, and Owens rolls him up for the pin. Kevin Owens gets the dirty win, and he is the new Intercontinental Champion. Brian, what do you think about this ending? And was there anything you would have done differently?
Given Owen's character, that is the perfect ending for him. I couldn't be happier with the ending, with the match itself, because I already knew going into the match that Owens would pull the best out of Ryback. My only issue with the match is that the fans in Houston, I'm a little disappointed, actually booed Ryback, which was a little odd to me. But nonetheless, the right person won the match in perfect heel fashion. Didn't even have to use his finisher, the pop-up powerbomb. So, yeah, it was great.
He didn't use it because I don't think he could have used it. I really didn't think. I kept wondering if Owen was going to win the match, how they were going to do that, because I didn't think he could hit Ryback with it. So, thankfully, we didn't have to see him try it. Dan, what was your thoughts on the match?
I thought some way, somehow, this guy was going to have to win this match without using a pop-up powerbomb, because there was no way, like you guys said, that he was going to win it with the pop-up powerbomb.
Swing by the ground, Matt. Wow. Okay.
I think he could have done it, but Ryback would have botched it.
I don't know. I even asked on Twitter, like, what were the chances of him doing a pop-up powerbomb to finish off the match, but I didn't see it was going to, you know, happen. I don't like the fact that Kevin Owens won this match necessarily, because the storyline didn't progress well enough, in my opinion. This makes Ryback's IC reign looks kind of weak. So I don't know what they're going to do from here, but Ryback and Kevin Owens rematch at Hell in a Cell, and I'm there for it.
If Ryback had to lose, this is the way he had to lose, as Brian said, it protects him, because Ryback is saying you really had to take the low road and do an illegal move and wreck my eyes where I'm totally blinded and distracted. You don't see finishers like that enough anymore, where everybody got to hit their finisher. And if I don't hit my finisher and you don't kick out of two of them, then it's not a good ending. That's crap. I was actually great with this finish. Mark, what were your thoughts on it? Do you think it could have been done differently?
I really loved the ending. Like you said, it's something that's not done too often. And I felt that they told a great story within the ring. Ryback got his arm worked on, so kind of made you wonder if he could actually use a shell shock, and we found out later he couldn't get it done. And it allows Kevin Owens to still be the heel that he is, and it was just an amazing told story, in my opinion. I was kind of wondering at first whether or not they would go with making the IC title look better, or if the person mattered more. So I guess they answered that, and the person matters more than the actual belt's prestige at that moment.
Yeah, they actually went as far for Kevin Owens to say that the belt's prestige meant absolutely nothing to him. That he didn't care about any of the past champions or what the belt meant. That all that mattered was that that belt gave him more money, just as I said his character means. So it is interesting to see where they do that. As far as it hurting Ryback, this will continue, of course. I think it actually benefits Ryback. Ryback's having to go through this whole story now of overcoming adversity, reading that stupid book that he uses that supposedly builds his character. Now Ryback's been knocked out again. He's had the low road taken against him. Ryback's going to have to fight back harder than ever to get back what's his. It's a good story, and I think this was the ending for it.
I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think this they probably gave the belt to him to shut up the IWC because they thinking that they're not giving Kevin Owens a proper push? They say, hey, since we didn't give him the U.S. title, let's give him the IC title.
All right, in a way, yes, but let me counter that by saying this. Before this Kevin Owens feud, we didn't know what they could do with Ryback or what story they could tell with Ryback. We just knew that Ryback needed to be champion or in the championship picture. What this does is allow us to tell a long-term story with Ryback. Now Ryback's been cheated, and he's going to have to be the chaser. It's like with Daniel Bryan. The Daniel Bryan story worked so well for so long when he wasn't the champ. It's whenever he's going after it, and he's almost there, and he's almost there, and there's another setback. That's what works, and the crowd does 90% get behind Ryback, which, like Bryan said, I was shocked as well that the crowd did not support Ryback. And they did get some Fiend Me More going there at the end, but I'm just really shocked that the crowd didn't support him. So it kind of took away from the effect of Owen using the dirty finish. But to answer your question, I think it was more along the lines to benefit Ryback in a long-term story than it was to appease the IWC. But now that you mention it, that could probably be a way to do both.
Can I add something real quick?
Yes, absolutely.
Just to add to what Dan said about Ryback's reign, him losing it fairly quickly to Owens, and the fact that Owens didn't have to use the pop-up powerbomb. Now, a couple things I disagree with on that. Owens is not the type of character that you need to make look strong by doing any unnecessary moves. Pop-up powerbomb is something that he'll use on somebody to make it look devastating to someone like Cena or Sami Zayn, to the point to where you have to stop him from using it.
Ryback's invincible to powerbombs after the Shield.
You don't need to use it on him because he won by being a heel. He won by any means necessary. He took advantage of the fact that the referee couldn't see what he was doing because his intentions were feeding his family and making his family happy. Ryback, as far as his reign as Intercontinental Champion, was an accident. Regardless of what anybody else wants to say about it, it was an accident. And the fact that he carried it as well as he did is a testament to the guy's character and his fan favoritism. the guy carried the Intercontinental Championship and people got behind him. I feel like he lost it, and you said, Anthony, it's going to be a benefit to him because he can move on to better things now.
I don't think it's even a better thing. He's going to use Kevin Owens to elevate him, and it's going to work.
I don't even see Owens continuing this feud very long.
Wow.
Maybe they did listen to the IWC because the IWC is pretty knowledgeable when it comes to what people actually want to see because we are the ones that watch the shows. But the point in fact is people know the expectations of what a match with Owens could be. And there's so many superstars lined up right now that can take on Owens and perform great matches that you're bringing legitimacy back to these titles just by the sheer talent that you're putting before them. So you have Owens as the guy that everybody wants to beat to get the belt. That's going to create a lot of great matches. And then you have people like Ryback who could be moving on to greater things now that they see that he can carry a belt like the Intercontinental title. So possibly moving forward and carrying the U.S. title.
Mark, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to add before we move along?
I actually disagree. I think this is probably going to stay around as a feud. Probably will actually get changed up to a triple threat eventually when Cesaro comes in. But I see Ryback sticking along with this feud just because it does tell such a great story and Owens can bring more out of him than the majority of the roster.
Well, only time will tell. I'm happy, of course. Everybody knows my Kevin Owens fanboy, what have you. But Owens is the Intercontinental champ. We're going to see what it does for the belt. Now we're going to move on to Dolph Ziggler and Rusev. A story that none of us wanted to get behind, but here we are in it anyway. Dolph Ziggler comes out wearing Lana on his crotch. That is right, we are not exaggerating, that is what happened. Is his new ring attire? Sent out a tweet about it. I guess Lana's supposed to be impressed. Rusev comes out and he dominates most of the match, keeping Ziggler grounded. The finish was Ziggler reversing the accolade again into the super kick. Summer Rae standing on the apron and Dolph hits the ropes, knocking her in the ring. The referee then throws her out like she was trying to interfere or something. Summer grabs her heel and throws it at fans, and then she throws one supposedly at Ziggler, but it hits Rusev. Ziggler rolls him up for the pin, 1, 2, 3. Ziggler gets the win, and Summer Rae is standing there looking befuddled. Mark, is this the way they should have done this ending?
I see Dolph Ziggler eventually taking this character, the Rick Rude pants and all, as a heel and just kind of play into the whole womanizer type player or whatever they're trying to tell. Because obviously he kissed Summer Rae's hand at the end of it as he was walking out. So he's trying to play both sides of the fence. But yes, it was strange seeing Lana re-Instagram her excitement over having her face on Dolph Ziggler's crotch. And I'm not really too happy about that. That's kind of awkward. But the match itself was good for what it was. And Ziggler kind of did take a cheap win. So maybe there's that too.
Yeah, it was actually kind of weird how we all kind of sit here and said that maybe they're trying to turn Ziggler heel and make on Rusev. And I said it wasn't possible. They really didn't lean to it in this match, which I didn't expect. This match didn't really give any kind of closure to me whatsoever. Dan didn't do anything for you.
All right, so first of all, I didn't notice that was Lana on his crouch until you guys said it, which makes it even more funnier. But it does something to the storyline a little bit because I'm kind of interested into seeing what will happen between Dolph Ziggler and Summer Rae. Seems like they're trying to turn him into, like Mark said, Ravishing Rick Rude with a hint of HBK. But I don't know. I can't wait till Lana comes back and reunites with Rusev because that's what we all want. They want them to reunite and cause chaos.
Whenever you put a Band-Aid over cutting your jugular vein, that's what it feels like they're doing with this story. They're just trying to patch up an open flesh wound. They can't fix it. They don't know what direction they're going with it. Ron, do you think they have a clue with it?
This storyline is like quicksand. They thought it was going to be easy to get through, and then they realized it wasn't. And the more they struggle with it, the deeper they're getting with it. And it's horrible.
But think about how many setbacks they've had. It started with Dolph's concussion. That cut him out another good month and a half, and they had to rely on Lana, who can't wrestle, or she was preparing, but she wasn't ready for that yet. And then she hurt herself in the squabble. They've had setbacks galore, and now I have no clue what direction they're going.
Creative 101. He had a concussion. Okay, cool. Have him come back. Have him play with Lana. Have him play with Summer Rae. Have him have split personalities or something. Like, he doesn't realize he's backstage with Summer Rae. You know, maybe he blacks out and that's what he does. He goes and plays around with her. When he comes back too, he's playing around with Lana. Even that's more creative than what they're doing. And I tweeted earlier, with his little getup that he has, if Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels ever had a love child, it would be Dolph Ziggler.
That's hilarious. Mark.
I actually think that the end of this story is a double turn between Ziggler and Rusev.
I still find it impossible for Rusev to turn face. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. We're going to move on now to the New Day and the Dudley Boys. In this match, the Dudley do control it early. By the way, shout out to Xavier. He got the Rufio chance.
Rufio, 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 Rufio.
Mark nailed it way better than I did.
Nailed it.
New Day comes out. They control it mostly early. The Dudley go for the 3D. They get a two count. Xavier interferes to get disqualified. Out of nowhere, just takes the back of the head. That's the end of the finish. After the match, the New Day goes for a 3D of a table of their own. Which, by the way, guys, I was distraught because I was seriously behind this Save the Tables movement. And how dare the New Day grab a table like they're going to break one themselves? I was distraught. So then when that wound up, Xavier Woods going through the table, I thought that they were going to save this spot for later. They didn't. Although, Kofi and Big E have not went through one yet. Just going to put that out there. Anybody okay with this match, how it went? Because I wasn't. This was a crap. This is probably my worst match of the night. And I was not expecting that at all. I'll start with you, Mark.
The match itself, I was fine with the ending. I thought that they could have brought a few better spots into the match, but maybe that they want just to save that for a longer feud or maybe some different night. I'm okay with the numbers game being played to the New Day's advantage, but I kind of understand the reason why they wanted to break the Dudleys into a table. I know we're supposed to save the tables because that's how we breathe and stuff. But at the same token, they would have been getting a piece of their own medicine, and maybe they could have converted the Dudleys into saving tables as well.
Sir, Bill Nye signed that petition, sir. Bill Nye would not approve of them breaking that table.
But so did Barack Obama.
Barack Obama did too. The President of the United States.
Are you serious?
Yeah, no, he didn't. No, that's what they said.
Barack Obama signed the petition.
Would New Day lie to us? No, they would not. No, no, no.
So did the authority, by the way.
Yeah, hashtag save the tables. We're going to keep that hashtag going. Brian, were you okay with this?
Let me just say that coffins are made of wood and Triple H buries everybody.
Ouch.
So it means nothing that the authority signed a petition. Just throwing that out there. It was okay with the match until somebody kicked Bubba Ray in the head and they gave him a knee to the face like Seth did Cena. And it was real. I don't know if anybody caught it, but you can.
Bubba caught it.
Yeah, it was Big E in the corner whenever he went over to do it.
Yeah, and you're talking about the splash, because the splash was ridiculous on the apron.
All I know is Bubba Ray just looked like Sting towards the end of the match, and he's just wobbling around. Like, all these table shots have taken his toll on him finally 10 years later, and you can't figure out what's wrong with him. And then he's talking to Devon after the match, and he's explaining to him, he's like, I took a knee to my head. And you could clearly see him explaining it to Devon because he didn't know what was going on either. I was okay until then. He couldn't figure out what he was doing almost half the time at the end of the match, and it slowed the pace down. So the match didn't really do much for me. Yeah, New Day's hilarious, and the trumpet playing Rocky was great. But again, I blame the crowd, because the crowd just, they suck tonight. Sorry, guys, I'm in Houston, but y'all suck tonight. Like, y'all couldn't wake up for anything. If you can't wake up for the New Day, then you need to go home.
I definitely feel like that he was hurt on the splash more than anything when I saw that splash. That's the second time poor Darren Young was the first victim of it. I love Big E, love that move, all the moves he does, but that move has to stop, I think. He ain't really hurting people. Dan, Are you okay with it? I know I got a question for you, actually, my friend. With this dirty finish here, I know you're against Spike Dudley returning. Looks like the Dudleys are gonna need a third man to even these numbers.
No, not really.
I'm telling you, they need Spike.
Wrestling Goons tweeted it earlier today.
Make up another family member or something, but overall the match was okay. Now that you mentioned with the whole knee to the head shot, I was wondering, like, why is Bubba Ray so sluggish towards the end? Because I must have missed it. The match was okay. I enjoyed the Rocky theme and the trombone playing. And like I said before, this feud is going to continue on for about another 2 or 3 months. And it's whatever. I kind of figured it was going to end in a DQ anyway. So
I was actually disappointed with the DQ. Just saying.
Yeah, no, I was too. This was terrible for me. Especially on a pay-per-view. Like, if this was a Raw match or a SmackDown match, I'm like, cool, great, whatever. I expected some kind of flubbery. I just didn't expect this kind of blatant flubbery. Because I know that we're leaning toward a table match. That's going to be the finish, and that's when the Dudleys get their payoff.
And Houston booed the New Day.
Well, I mean, I expected that, and I was okay with that. That when they first started coming out, they really led into the New Day section. And I was like, great, we're going to feel old school now. Where they clap and the crowd's gonna get behind it with the sucks, that's good. I want that again. Because my biggest fear is that they're gonna get cheered everywhere they go, and Vince is gonna be like, oh man, this is great. We gotta put a big face run behind these guys. And that's gonna bury them, just like that Triple H shovel you're talking about.
I mean, maybe it's just me. I just don't feel like Houston is the place that has the right to boo people that are successful.
Well, we're getting WrestleMania 32, so we better go ahead and figure that out quick over there in the Texas area.
Well, that's Dallas.
Yeah, either way, Texas is a place to be.
Yeah, the Houston crowd was kind of mediocre, I guess, compared to other crowds.
They probably realized what they were going to get.
True, true.
All right, we're going to move on to Nikki Bella and Charlotte. I know this is a match that caused a lot of controversy on our show in the last upcoming weeks. But now that Nikki Bella is the champ, it seems like nobody seemed to care. The match itself had some good psychology that I thought early to start the match. Charlotte had hurt her leg or knee or ankle, and she really sold it pretty much the whole match until the very end. When she locked in the figure eight, she did no kind of pain or anything. She had tears coming out of her eyes, but I feel like that was more about her being happy than anything else. I was really upset with that part of it. They just seemed like they had to get to that part of the match in the finish. Up until then, though, I'm going to go ahead and give credit to Nikki Bella. She really did her job of working on that leg and stretching her out good. Nikki, awesome run, great way to end it, and I feel like she helped elevate Charlotte, but I don't think Charlotte was ready still. That's my 2 cents. Dan, what are your thoughts on this Divas match?
Oh, boy. So, the psychology of it is that I give Nikki Bella her credit. It was great. She dominated that match like she's supposed to as a heel. Cool. The ending was not convincing to me. It should have ended differently. It should have gave Charlotte more so of a, hey, you dominated this match for the most part or whatever. Let me come in and do my spots. Let me show off that I can make this comeback. She really didn't necessarily make a comeback to win this match. It was like, oh, I'm getting lucky.
Yep, that's what happened. She just jumped right into it. That's exactly what my complaint was, too. Brian, did you feel the same way?
Can't wait for this one. You know I've been waiting on this since before the pay-per-view was even over. The psychology of the match, as far as Nikki goes, was excellent. And go ahead, Mark, you're listening. We're recording this, so it's down on record. I will give Nikki her respect. She impressed me tonight. She makes me wish that she could do this every time, but then at the same time, she's a heel, so it's not going to be expected. My only issue is that Seth Rollins can do this every night and perform at his best and still be a heel, so she should be able to as well.
Seth Rollins and her are two totally different characters.
I understand, but they're both on the upper echelon of their women's and men's division. That she knows she can do it, and we all know she could do it now, that she should be doing it every time. And that's fine if she does it and she wins like Owens did. He didn't win cleanly, but he won. We know he can do it cleanly if he had to. My only issue with the match, and I was talking to you earlier about it, Anthony, that I really was concerned. I thought that she was actually injured. she's not the best at concealing her emotions during a match. So I really thought that she was injured. And when she started realizing that Nikki was using the psychology during the match, drive in that her knee was injured and she was going to do whatever she had to maintain the victory and retain her belt, it made for a really great match. I mean, that's wrestling 101, and you know this, Anthony, that she did everything that she was supposed to as far as delivering a good match. The issue is, you're going to sit here and try and sell me that her knee is injured, and I'm believing it. She dominated her the entire match. There was no back and forth. Every time she would wage a comeback, you would knock her back down. You waited till the very end, and everybody knew it was coming. She gets the figure eight, no pain whatsoever in the face of Charlotte. If you really wanted me to believe that it was happening, you could at least have the hole drawn out a little bit longer and really sold me on it. It's hurting Charlotte more by doing that move than it's hurting Nikki.
Mark, do you kind of agree with the finish of this match, which is the psychology was off?
I'm glad to see that Nikki Bella is finally getting the attention and the love that she deserves. But I will say that I told you that Charlotte wasn't ready. Her at the very end, that kind of proved it. There was no storytelling on Charlotte's behalf besides that she could take a beating for 3/4 of the match, or well, probably 4/5 of a match, and get her last move in like she no-sold the entire match before. I think she might have picked that up from John Cena, so that's pretty hilarious that Charlotte's learning more how to become John Cena, and Nikki's actually improving a lot. But it's sad that Nikki is not going to get to see number 497. I was waiting for her to actually be the best diva in the world and be able to prove it.
That was the greatest tweet ever today when she sent that out about taking a shot at CM Punk. Wow, now I really want this to happen to see if they push that envelope. Unfortunately, they didn't go there. What's up, Dan?
I have a question. Yep. So we all pretty much are agreeing that she wasn't ready. Who would we rather have had to be in that spot tonight besides Charlotte?
Well, obviously the answer is Sasha Banks. That's what everybody's going to say. But like I said, you can't go straight to the finish line. They got to build there. So if Charlotte is a pedestal to get there, then I'm fine with it because she's not the finish line.
Let me add one thing real quick. I'm okay with Charlotte being in the picture because it's going to lead to bigger things with the other women. My issue is that Nikki completely carried this match, and I defy anybody to argue with that. Nikki proved who the veteran wrestler was, and it by far was not Charlotte. If they had Charlotte lose, and at the next pay-per-view had her win, I could get behind it. Not that I'm going to turn into a Roman Reigns hater towards Charlotte. It just didn't make sense.
Speaking of Roman, we're going to have to move on. We had the Wyatt family. They were going to face Ambrose, Reigns, and a mystery partner. And guys, you heard it here on Wrestling Goons Radio. Don't want to take credit for it, but I'm going to take credit for it. I nailed it. Chris Jericho was the third man. This match started with Luke Harper. It's pretty much the whipping boy. Luke Harper took all the beating for the Wyatt anytime somebody needed one. Jericho didn't do much in this match early. The Wyatts isolated everybody as far as Reigns and Ambrose when they could. All the offense for the Shield stopped when Strowman entered the ring and his path of destruction. He literally threw them all around like ragdolls. In the end, Roman hits him with about 2 or 3 Superman punches. Dean hits a flying crossbody off the top rope and they take the big man off his feet. That's when Chris Jericho gets a blind tag to himself in the match. Roman Reigns looks baffled. He then hits a lion salt on Strowman, but he only gets a 2 count. And Roman gets pulled out of the ring by Bray Wyatt. Strowman is left there to destroy Chris Jericho, which he did. And at the end of the match, Jericho gives Ambrose and Reigns a little shoulder bump, leaving the ring. It looks like maybe Jericho is going to be a bad guy opposing the Shield. I don't know which member yet. Dan, are you okay with how this match went?
I wasn't okay with Jericho coming out. When I seen the whole lights and everything and the countdown, I was like, time for me to go to bed.
But I tried to tell you, I warned you.
His break right there.
Yeah. I guess it was okay. I'm not necessarily saying that I'm not a Chris Jericho fan. It's just that I expected someone better or someone else. The match itself was blah. I just knew that the White had to win this match because if you were to lose this match, you basically look pretty weak. Braun Strowman would have looked weak, and I would have found the reason to rip on Bray Wyatt. The ending got me think both Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose was going to turn heel and just attack Chris Jericho, but I don't think that was the case. It's like they're not going to be in his podcast anytime soon.
They probably will be on his podcast because he's notorious for carrying his storyline over into his show. I felt like you. I would have went the other way. I would have had maybe Roman get upset with him and beat him up for it, and he'll be like, I was just trying to help. I don't know where they're going to go with Jericho being the hell with it. Mark, any ideas, and are you okay with it?
This was another great storytelling, in my opinion, inside the ring. Anytime Braun Strowman was there, all chaos was loose and people were being destroyed. The other members of the Shield got their offense only on Luke Harper and a little bit of Bray Wyatt. So it did a good job at making Braun look really strong, like he is Abigail's black sheep or whatever. I, too, was hoping for a Shield beatdown of Chris Jericho just because I was hoping that they would hear how far the crowd was behind Chris Jericho and they could have called an audible, I think, and they could have grabbed that brass ring and just beat down Jericho and the crowd would have turned on them right then and they would have been set sail for a heel run, maybe teaming up later along the lines with Seth Rollins once they finally find another partner that can finally take out the Wyatts. But they went a different direction. That's my only really complaint about the whole subject.
Brian, how did you feel about this match and how it turned out?
When I heard the buzzer going off and realized it was Y2J, I could have fell asleep. I don't dislike Y2J. People can say that it's good storytelling. I don't see how. Sorry, Mark, but I'm going to completely disagree with you. I don't see how that's good storytelling. And you can say that they're going back to the feuds that Bray had with Jericho. The problem is, this whole feud with the Wyatts and Ambrose and Roman had nothing to do with Bray. They can beat Bray. Who they can't beat is Braun. So bringing in someone who can beat Bray serves no purpose to progress the storyline.
That's because they brought Chris Jericho in there. Roman Reigns has such an ego that he probably does think that he one-on-one could take it down Braun, and he would leave Jericho and Dean Ambrose to get Harper and Bray. So this has a little bit of story to it. Maybe Roman's not as powerful as he thinks he is.
I kind of like the direction that we were talking about in the very beginning of how this match had to end with a finish that involved the good guys, which I mean the Shield, having some kind of collusion that ruined their team. That's the finish that we got, so I'm not upset with that at all. What they had to do was to build a storyline that got Reigns away from the Wyatts and got him involved in something else. So in my mind, I feel like they succeeded in doing that.
And I completely disagree because we discussed this last week and I said it on our podcast. The only way that they would make the ending of the match work is whoever they bring into the match to help them win would actually interfere with Roman getting the victory. And what happened? As soon as Roman goes to finish off Braun, Y2J tags himself in.
So how is that a bad finish?
I'm about to tell you. It pissed Roman off and you can tell it pissed him off. He did nothing about it. It ended up being Y2J who left pissed. Dude, why are you mad? You're the one who cost him the victory. And that's how Roman should have saw it. You cost me the victory. I had this. I didn't need your help. You tagged yourself in. I didn't tag you in. Now I'm going to beat the crap out of you. So you beat the crap out of him. Clearly everybody in Houston woke up when Y2J came out. You're going to turn yourself heel. That automatically gets you away from the Wyatt family because you've just lost and you lost your singles match with Bray. You're done. Feud's over. Bray's better. You can't beat them. Now you feud Y2J. Maybe you can learn something from Y2J.
Wow.
Dan, you got any final thoughts?
Pretty much what Brian said. The feud should be over by now and somebody got a feud with Y2J and it looks like Roman, but what do you do with Dean Ambrose now?
He continues to be Roman Helaki. That's what he does.
Turn him loose, finally. Let the guy go.
Where does he go?
Eventually, Roman turns on Dean. I mean, you can only play this he's my sidekick lackey for so long until maybe Roman thinks, well, I've tried this partner, I've tried that partner. The only constant in here is me and you, and I know I'm better than all the people we're facing. Maybe it's you.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and move on to the part of the show that we're all excited about because we're all marked for Seth Rollins. And it starts his first of two matches of the night. He goes with the United States title defense against John Cena, all decked down in his white Power Ranger outfit.
And that stuff is awesome, I'm sorry.
And as Seth Rollins controlled the action early, staying one move ahead of Cena, as Michael Cole pointed out, he pandered to the crowd and got them to do the wave, which, by the way, was awesome. I don't know if they called an audible with this or not, but John Cena rolled him up for the patented two count. That got a loud crowd reaction when Cena went for the pin. They go back and forth, and Cena gets his stuff in, along with Rollins, including that flipping powerbomb that he does. Lots of two counts go back and forth. Stop me if you've heard this before. John Cena hits the AA. And he gets a clean pinfall. John Cena is now the 5-time United States champion, one away from tying Ric Flair. Brian, your thoughts on the match? Would it have gone any other way? And what is next for John Cena?
Sorry, Seth, but you losing the U.S. title was best for business. Now others can go after it. I've been waiting to say this all night. The only reason he won the U.S. title from Seth Rollins is to lose it to Cesaro. I am calling it. You can book it. I don't care what you say. It's going to happen. Open challenge will come, and Cesaro will beat John Cena for the U.S. title. And as far as the match goes, the match was great. Seth carried it, as usual. Whatever the hell you want to call what he did off the top rope into another suplex was beautiful. And I dare anybody else to try and do that move without killing themselves, because that was beautiful.
The little roll through, though, he just sat there and he did it, yeah, and he showed his strength off. He didn't do it like Cena does. He took a good 5 to 10 seconds to pause and to get Cena gathered up again.
It don't matter. He's not John Cena. He's Seth freaking Rollins. And that's all that matters.
I'm going to disagree that Seth carried the match. John Cena didn't botch anything this time. He didn't do his little stunner like you asked him not to do.
He must listen to the Wrestling Goons radio podcast then.
Well, John Cena did a phenomenal job in this match. They always have a great match when they're in the ring together. We knew that Seth was going to lose. I'm pretty sure we all called it. So, Dan, is there anything else they could have done differently?
The ending. I'm okay with John Cena winning, but the ending was a little bit too quick, I guess. Because I felt like it should have been more of a setup or a better setup at that.
Yeah, and they've done the multiple 5-AA finish before, so it only taking one kind of shocked me.
Overall, the match was probably the best match of the night. The spots was phenomenal. Seth Rollins just showed like how great he is. Not just a champion, just overall. He's like top 5 in the world right now. No lie.
Top 5 is a little unjustness, right? He's top 1 or 2.
Sorry, Jay Lethal.
Whoa.
We may get a rematch tomorrow for the U.S. title if John Cena does the whole open challenge. We might see Seth Rollins comes out and say, hey, I have my rematch clause, and we might see a great match again.
Let me go ahead and just respond to Brian real quick by saying Jay Lethal still has both of his titles.
Jay Lethal also had to cheat to keep them.
Oh, all right. Here's another short word on time. Mark?
The match was amazing. I agree with Anthony that even though Seth Rollins pulled out some new moves, and yes, the superplex into the suplex was amazing, it was a great match. The ending just went too quickly, in my opinion. I think he probably should have taken the AA on the outside that he did to him after the match, during the match, and then led into the AA in the middle of the ring for the final spot. That way Seth doesn't have to crawl back into the ring to start his match. But other than that, it was a great match, as usual, between the two.
As Mark alluded to, after the match is over, Seth Rollins decides he's the world heavyweight champion still. He doesn't have to wrestle Sting. John Cena tells him yes he does, and gives him an AA on the outside of the ring, rolls him back in, and that is where a wounded Seth Rollins is laying there as Sting comes out. Seth gets himself up over into the corner. Sting starts the match by hitting the Stinger Splash onto Seth. They brawl to the outside and back in the ring where Seth cuts him off. Sting goes through the Spanish announce table once they make themselves back outside. A nasty fall. I don't think somebody told Sting about that Spanish announce table. He hits the flying cross body off the top rope. Somebody also didn't tell him that it wasn't 1991 anymore. Thankfully, he's still alive to tell about it. He hits a scorpion death drop, but Seth gets his foot on the rope. Nice spot there. He gets two scorpion death locks on, and in the second one, Seth is able to turn it into a nice reversal, into a pinfall. Seth Rollins is still your World Heavyweight Champion. Mark, did you see this coming?
I thought that if this was the only one that Seth got to retain, it would be this one. Although I didn't think that it would be such a good match. And up until the point where Sting got the concussion, I don't know if he got it earlier with the Spanish announce table because it looked like he hit his head on one of the monitors, or if it was him diving out. But at some point in time, he took a pretty nasty fall, and I believe he probably was suffering from a concussion. Kudos to Seth Rollins for standing up on the top rope and allowing Sting to push you off. Because if he pushed you too far, your head was about to hit the top of the railing, and that wouldn't have been good for anyone. Overall, the better man won.
Also, I want to say kudos to Seth Rollins for Sting. That's a good thing that Mark brought up. There's a part where Sting gets Irish whipped in the ropes. He falls. Sting legitimately cannot stand on his feet anymore. They bring the doctor in the ring. Seth Rollins stalls for time by literally playing to the crowd the way only Seth Rollins can do. Kudos to Seth for doing that. He didn't take the attention off of Sting, but at the same time, he let Sting regather his bearings. I was really, really impressed by that. Dan, your thoughts on Seth Rollins retaining his title here?
You know I'm okay with this, right?
Of course.
However, a piece of me was like, Sting is going to win this. And I'm going to see him be champion just for a moment, even though it didn't make sense for him to be in that spot, though. But we got to stand up and tip our hat off to Sting because he took some nasty bumps and still was able to get up. The match was not bad at all. He was not bad. Everything he did was great.
This was the best match I've seen it work since the Bully Ray match he had at TNA, Hardcore Justice. Sting put in the work tonight, and if this is his last match, he went out good, in my opinion. Brian?
I mean, I might as well be the odd man out. Could have ended the match with the Cena versus Rollins and been okay. It was a good match between the two. In terms of him being in the match to begin with, I didn't want Sting to win the belt, but I felt like they set Sting up for failure, putting him in that match, because where do you go from that if you lose? You've lost already once to Triple H, and now you're going to lose to Seth Rollins, which if you're going to lose to someone, it might as well be Triple H and Seth Rollins, but still, you agreed to allow them to put you in the spot to where you should win the belt just because you're in that spot. But you really, you know you're not the person who deserves to win the belt. As far as him getting the concussion or whatever the injury he did receive, it was one of the instances where he was slung into the turnbuckle. From what I understood, they were saying that he had a shoulder injury, whatever the case may be. I'm sure going through the table before that didn't help. You kind of wonder why they would allow themselves to do that, knowing that they're not in the best of shape. And I feel like it almost takes away from the potential of the match because you're putting yourself in harm's way, just like with Undertaker versus Brock. The match itself didn't do anything for me. The better man won, and I'm glad that Seth retained.
After the match was over, Seth is sitting there chilling. Thinks his night's over, Sheamus' music hits. Looks like we're going to have Seth in his third match of the night. Seth cuts him off as he hits the ring. Sheamus ducks with his briefcase, hits the broom kick on Seth, and is ready to cash in. And that is when the music of Kane hits. The monster is back. He comes down. Sheamus is out of the ring. Kane grabs Seth Rollins by the throat, chokeslam. Sheamus looks very pleased and tells Kane to do it again. That's when Kane grabs Sheamus, chokeslams him as well. Picks Seth up, hits him with a tombstone. That's the end of the show. There is no cash in, and the monster Kane is back. Mark, are you okay with the finish of this show?
I'm okay with it. It's not what I was expecting nor hoping would happen. I thought Sheamus and Kane were going back to with the authority, simply because if he would have chokeslammed Seth again and allowed Sheamus to have the cash in, Sheamus' interaction with the authority would have meant more earlier in the night. it could have been a way for Seth to go back face and go back with the Shield. I know we're all wanting the Shield reunion, except for maybe Anthony. But I'm glad that there's the Monster back in the WWE. Maybe he goes up against Braun Strowman eventually.
Everybody seems to be okay with the fact that this is setting up Kane and Seth Rollins. But if this were 3 months ago, and if you go back and listen to some of our older episodes, everybody would have got Kane being anywhere near a main event storyline, and now we're all cool with him being in one. Dan, you're one included. Tell me why this is okay.
Because Seth Rollins injured Kane, and he's out for revenge. However, if it was 3 months ago, the storyline would never made sense. And plus, pretty much, Seth Rollins beat everybody at the top. So I'm okay with this. Let this go out for about 2-3 months and see where it goes. However, I don't want to see Kane win the title, but I'm okay with this.
Kane needs to win the belt if they're going to give him in the title run one more time.
No.
I'm not going to think he's legitimate if he doesn't.
Why do you think they need to give him the belt? Like, if that's the case, they might as well give Mark Henry one last run. Why not give Chris Jericho one last title run?
You're acting like Kane isn't worthy of one. Kane works solid matches every single time he's asked to work one.
So we're just going to give him the title because he's been a great worker and he deserves it?
Yes! Why not?
No, it's over. His title run is over. Why not give it to Taker or something?
Brian, would he be okay with a Kane title run?
The mask. And that's the only reason why. Because it's the character. They don't care for Kane himself. They care for the character. They like the character. And they know that the character itself brings out a different side of the wrestler Kane.
You know how many times in the last 3 years they put that stupid mask back on him and nobody cared?
That's the reason why I'm excited for Kane. Because the Big Red Machine is back.
Are you? Well, why don't we go back to the Daniel Bryan storyline right after WrestleMania? You know, the one when Kane was driving the car in the back of the line trying to kill AJ and Daniel? Remember that? That was awful. That was terrible.
Can I tell you how I feel the match should have played out at Night of Champions? Seth Rollins retains the title from Sting. Sheamus comes out, attempts to cash in, and then bro kick Seth Rollins, and then Kane comes out. It would make more sense to not necessarily have Kane as part of the Authority, but to have Sheamus as the new face of the Authority, and have Sheamus cash in successfully on Rollins, albeit from Kane doing another chokeslam or a tombstone piledriver to him, whatever the case may be. You would have the belt off of Rollins, and you would have it on Sheamus. Someone mentioned it earlier that it may have been the first time ever, since we're into the first time evers now, that the last Money in the Bank winner won the title on the cash-in, and the very next Money in the Bank winner won on the cash-in from the person who won the last Money in the Bank. Rollins doesn't have the belt anymore, right? So it wouldn't be a main event. It would be Kane versus Seth, with Kane basically just sinking vengeance, allowing him to get his ankle broken by Brock. It wouldn't be a main event pitcher anymore, right? So you would be okay with it.
No, I still wouldn't be okay with it because it still involves Kane and Seth Rollins. You don't relegate Seth Rollins to something like that. I get the point that he attacked his leg. I was there in Atlanta when it happened. I just think that it's stupid. And if you're not going to give Kane the belt out of it, I don't see any point in doing it. Mark, any final thoughts before we end the show?
I'm okay with either scenario, really. Kane, I think, deserves a title run in WWE one last time. But I had much rather see him have a tag title run with him and his brother, The Undertaker. That would be my going away present to both of them. I'm okay with the feud being Kane versus Seth Rollins. And by the way, Masked Kane is the only Kane that's great. And I'm just wondering, did Stephanie give him his mask back? Because if I was Seth Rollins, I need some questions answered by the Authority.
I get the reason why it's so important. Oh, he's the demon. That's great. They put this mask on him 1,000 times. They just did it on SmackDown 4 or 5 months ago. Like, it's nothing new. So it's like it's Kane's back. That's all it is. I'm okay with it, I guess, for what it is, for telling that story or completing it, and Seth doesn't have anything else to do right now.
It's just the image, sir. It's the mask. They like the idea of the demon.
Dan, I'll go with you. Any final thoughts from you? And grade the show while you're at it.
I was going to grade the show a B- until Kane came out, and that just bumped it up to a B+. Final thoughts. Sting was buried tonight, but I did see my favorite wrestler of all time wrestle, even though I knew he was going to get buried, but it's okay. Nikki Bella put on a good match, dominating match, I wish she could do that every time she wrestles. Seth Rollins is the best in the world right now. Second best in the world right now. He can do no wrong, really. And I'm really excited that we may get to see Kane versus Seth Rollins for the title next month at Hell in a Cell. The same pay-per-view that we're going to get his brother, The Undertaker, versus Brock Lesnar. It's going to be epic. I'm already sold on it.
By the way, when you say the second best in the world, you do mean Jay Lethal is number one, right?
No,
we mean CM Punk.
Oh, that's horrible. That's terrible. Brian, go ahead and grade the show real quick before we get out of here.
Jay Lethal can be number three. How about that?
Well, we'll see.
I will grade the show a B+, not because of Kane or Sting or anything like that. It's a B because of Seth Rollins. It would be greater, but they had to make me wait on Seth Rollins to get to him. But actually, it was the Nikki Bella match, as much as I hate to admit it. That, to me, was the best match of the night, just because of the psychology. And I hate to say it, because the end sucked.
Mark Pitts, Dan Tanner and Brian Compton are both on record on this episode. They gave Nikki Bella their match of the night. How does this make you feel? I'm ecstatic by hearing this.
Yes, sir. I'm just assuming that Smarky Smark and the Bella Bunch finally took hold and made some new people come over to the Bella side of thinking.
I guess.
I'm going to give the pay-per-view myself a B, simply because I think some of the stories progressed. Some of them, I think, didn't answer as many questions as I really had. I'm curious to see where it goes, and probably my questions will be answered on Monday Night Raw. My best match of the night is actually going to go to Kevin Owens and Ryback. Second best honorable mention is the Nikki Bella match. And kudos to Sting for taking as many licks as he did. That was a pretty great match that he put on for being 60 or...
Nikki Bella is nowhere near the best diva in the world. And she is not the queen diva. And she is not fearless.
She doesn't have to be. It's the image.
All I'm saying is she's not the best.
I'm going to go ahead and give my final grade as a B minus. That's going to be one of the lower ones as far as everybody else in the show. I was disappointed in a lot of the finish. This was the night of roll-ups for me. Everybody lost by a roll-up, or they lost by the DQ finish. And the New Day, in particular, that finish was really upset me. You could have done so much more with that. Nikki Bella, dinner thing. Salute to your title run. It was well-earned, and I'm very glad that I was a proud member of the Bella Army. That would be my final thoughts on this show. Monday Night Raw coming up. Night of Champions is going to be behind us. We had a lot of shocks and spoilers. Fallout coming tomorrow night should be interesting. A lot of us bring it into. Stay tuned for that. You can catch us on WrestlingRoomsRadio.blogspot.com. All of our other episodes are there as well. For the mobile stuff, get us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search Wrestling Rooms Radio. Always, I want to thank Max Sports Channels and Power Station FM for letting us be on your airwaves. This is Wrestling Rooms Radio, a podcast from the IWC for the IWC. And for Dan Tanner, Mark Pitts, and Brian Compton, we'll see you.